Rockcastle Media Networks presents
Rock Talk with Dominic Forbes.
David Coverdale was largely unknown until he was selected to replace Ian Gillan in Deep Purple in 1973, sharing vocal duties with bassist and vocalist Glenn Hughes. Coverdale immediately became an international rock superstar with a million selling albums Burn, Stormbringer and Come Taste the Band.
Do you think there was ever a moment you'd ever been more nervous than in 1973, than the day that you travelled to the Deep Purple audition?
No, well, I had scotch to reinforce. Forced me. I had a bottle of Bell's to
so that's
the
not
job.
Just a legend.
No. I think one of the reasons I got the job because I took the booze.
Hi, I'm Randy.
I'm Fred.
And I'm Dominic Forbes, where in a moment we will be talking to Randy Bachman and Fred Turner of Bachman Turner Overdrive.
You two seems like such great friends, and you have such a good camaraderie between each other. Was there ever any bad blood which set you apart?
I don't think so. I think there were situations which kind of put a little cloudy weather over the thing, but, you know, basically, I think I've understood Randy from day one, and I also know what he put into things, so I never had a problem with anything that went on business-wise between us, and always thought that somewhere along the road our paths would keep crossing.
Is that the same for you, Randy?
Yes. BTO, there was a distinct division of age. Fred and I are the same age. We were the same situation with the family and children, and the other guys in the band were single.
This week on Rock Talk, I'm talking to Ian Gillan.
Knowing that, why would you go back into a situation where you don't particularly like one particular member of a band?
Which one are you talking about?
Well, maybe Purple.
Who did I dislike?
You and Richie never really got on, did you?
He was my roommate. We were best buddies.
You've got history now. It's such a shame, isn't it?
We drifted apart. Things have not been right for a long time, but, you know, some of us grow up, and it's not an issue. I find it all kind of very much in the past now. You look at the good things, I think things come to a head, and you think, well, the hell with it. What am I going to do? You make a decision on the day, and you move on.
1 hour each week. FTP delivery, 100% self-contained barter.
Next up, Jimmy Page. I've heard that you play bass on a Led Zeppelin track, but I don't actually know which one.
That's the way. Yeah, on the end. It's just, I was laying loads of stuff on it, and John Paul Jones wasn't there, and I just thought, oh, I've got to get the bass on there, and I just popped it on. It's not really substantial or anything, it's just the colour right at the end of the song.
Taking a look behind the scenes at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, joined by Todd Messick of the organisation.
What are the rules for being inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
The most quantitative measure is that 25 years had to have passed since the artist's first release. We look at their impact, not only on the music and future artists, but also on society. In time, we believe that every act that deserves to be inducted will be inducted.
Brian Adams talking about his album Reckless.
One of the other fortunate things that happened was just before we finished mixing the record, I recorded a duet with Tina Turner. She was just finishing her album, which was an album called Private Dancer. We both released these albums simultaneously. Her album went on to, you know, change her life, and mine did mine. We went on tour together, but it was enormously changing because from obscurity to being recognized.
Lynn Johns is an elite record producer and engineer. He spent his career working with the likes of the Rolling Stones, The Who, The Faces, The Clash, The Eagles and The Beatles. He spoke about the dubious pleasure of working with The Eagles.
The problem that had started brewing while we were making Desperado continued. They were not happy souls. They didn't particularly want to be in the studio doing what we were doing. They weren't really well prepared. They didn't really have enough material. We did the best with what we had. And frustrations were appearing, particularly on the part of Glenn Frey.
The voice of rock, Glenn Hughes, talks to me exclusively about why Black Country Communion split up.
This has been wildly spoken about, but I've never really spoke to a press guy about it before. We had done 33 shows on the first two albums. Metallica were just warming up on 33 shows. On the last album, Kevin Shirley said to me, Afterglow is a Glenn Hughes album. Can we record it as Black Country? I said, I will do a Black Country album called Afterglow only if we can tour. And he said, we'll work it out. We did the album called Afterglow, which I pretty much wrote, and we didn't tour. I was the one that left the band, but I didn't go public with it. Joe and I have never fallen out about this. But I left the band simply because there was no way the band could continue with no touring.
It was just a shame. There was such disappointment around the whole thing.
Dominic, that band, if that band would have continued, if Joe could have put his career on hold for 1 year, that band could have been a top five national, international band now.
I'm Dominic Forbes. This has been Rock Talk. 208-718-2525. RockCastleMedia.com.